This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
We've got a session of 20 minutes where either from this morning or elsewhere, if there's any questions that you want to pose to us as a panel about any aspect that occurs to you, it's your opportunity.
So, yeah, John Shedley again, National Apprenticeship Service. Graham, perhaps a question's to you directly, but then with the panel, with a follow-up. Your second slide, you had those three routes about 16 to 18 progression. And, of course, I'm going to pick on the apprenticeships. You know, you had something like 45, I think, or whatever. A very, very small number. But to be honest, I think it actually highlights our obsession with age, not stage, rather than flipping it on its head. Because, actually, I wouldn't expect any 18-year-old apprentices to progress, because I would argue that they're not ready. You know, most advanced apprentices are going to be 19 or 20. So, for me, that we're obsessed with age, not stage, and our funding models don't help. So, panel, you know, discuss.
Thanks for that. Do you want to take that one first off?
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I think when I thought about it, I thought putting it up there was interesting because it kind of shows the fact that things happen at different ages. And I think that's important to know. It's important to be aware of that. It's important it kind of informs our thinking to an extent. And I think it's important that people are aware that when people are going, it's at a different age, an older age. And therefore, we can develop our models of provision around that.
Thanks. Any comments? Mary?
I suppose I would say that we've got to get the funding following the student. Many of you will know I have a health service background, and it's taken us a decade to get the money to follow the patient rather than kind of block allocations. And I think the same needs to happen both with apprenticeship and with FE and with HE. And some people would argue that you should have, as it were, an individual training account that you can draw on throughout your life, rather than institutions be protected with large sums to then recruit people into. So I think we might see, with the change in funding, some really quite radical models that might destabilise some institutions but give the power to the learner.
Yeah, I think this issue of funding and where does government really have its heart in terms of all of this is really quite an interesting one, because if you look at the Lord High Mandelson's exhortations to the HE sector to get more engaged with adults and to get more engaged with business and to get more engaged with apprentices, excellent. The next week you then see the LSC and its balkanised remains that are going to come into existence next year doing completely the opposite and making it more difficult for adults to learn in FE, particularly level 3, more difficult in terms of train to gain, and in fact, therefore, the whole foundation of anything that was really going to start to move things onwards in terms of adults and people in work moving onwards into different kinds of models of higher education, immediately being undermined. So, I mean, if one takes a cup half-empty view of the world, it's not been very smart. On the other hand, I think if one looks at some of the ways in which we can make this work into the longer term, I think there is going to be a lot of pressure still to make the employer-co-financed HE concept work. And the only way that that will work, I think, is in terms of focusing in on apprentices and people in employment and really building on activity that's undertaken in that kind of setting. And I think, actually, the kind of contraction we're likely to see in the HE sector over the next few years actually provides an enormous opportunity for HE-FE collaboration to start thinking this through and really getting a very robust model in place without the treadmill, if you like, of there's lots of ASNs next year, so we've got to get something in place within 9 months for this. We can see this next period of time as actually a very good one to really plan things through and then get a model that's going to work. And then when some more resource comes along, make sure this is done properly.
Thanks, Ian. Colin?
I think I'd only add that I think the obsession's not only with age, John, but it's also with mode of study. We do see a fair bit of lip service paid to the different modes of study, part-time, CPD and so on. But very often, the actual funding doesn't allow that or actually actively discourages it. So I think they're twin obsessions, age and mode of study.
The other thought when we saw the various routeways is that many schools are encouraging people to take examinations earlier. so taking GCSEs at the age of 14 and 15. Whatever the philosophy behind it, it does mean that they'll be starting on a level 3 programme, whatever that level 3 programme looks like at 15. And actually that learners will be presenting themselves for further study at a very different age. So the model that we're actually working with will be a much more complicated model. But if you think of what I would need to do next year, you're presenting reports 14 to 19, 19 plus, employer responsiveness, HE. So we have four different funding streams and four different masters to actually suffice. And I don't think that structure is tenable if the vision that's been described has any chance of moving forward. It's just too complicated for that to happen. And someone, I think, will start to look at the institutions because they present a barrier to students actually and learners actually reaching their full potential.
Following on from John's question, Richard Spencer from UCAS. We did some internal analysis of our data in terms of the number of applicants who'd got NVQ level 3s or apprenticeships, and I put caveats around all the data for various reasons. But essentially, of those that expressed an interest in applying, or made applications rather, roughly 10% were actually given offers for HE study. I'd just be interested in the panel's views as to whether that reflects more on advanced apprentices or HE admissions staff.
Interesting. Colin?
I don't have a great deal of sympathy because almost all my work is around foundation degrees, and I don't think that would be an issue had they applied for those to the same extent, at least. Probably we do need to look at admissions within universities when we're looking at the different levels in the progression framework, the large complex one that we saw this morning, for example. Many admissions tutors are just not very knowledgeable about what those qualifications are and mean, and being very busy people, they think, oh, well, no, not that one. Oh, A-levels, yes, I recognise those. And I think that's part of the problem.
Can I just build on that? UCAS, back in the early part of the decade, spent an inordinate amount of time working with HEIs to brief them on the new curriculum model, Curriculum 2000, making certain that everyone understood what was happening. I wonder how many admissions tutors understand what's happening to the apprenticeship framework from this particular year and understand that apprentices will be offering themselves with a different structure with functional skills underpinning it, and that almost it's predicated on information around a certain type of learner and certain type of learning, as opposed to perhaps making certain that there's equality of access. Sorry, Mary.
I wanted to say that we're certainly looking at centralising admissions in the university in order that there is a clear understanding amongst senior administrators what equates to what, so that we get a more equitable approach, because unfortunately I think what Colin says is probably true, and I don't think that shines well on HE. But there is another tension in universities, and it's one that we very rarely talk about at a meeting like this today, and that is league tables. And league tables are important to universities, and that it's really important that we pressure the people who compile the league tables to understand that these qualifications are equal to and as good as A-levels. Because otherwise universities will be very, very reluctant, particularly the Russell Group, to take these new qualifications seriously.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know which institutions had made offers to those 10% who got given the offers, because I think if we look at this at a sectoral level, you've got quite a lot of different custom and practice across universities. Many universities still, the admissions tutor in the individual department has an incredible amount of autonomy. It's done on Buggins turn. I'm not talking about my institution because we do it a very different way as does Plymouth. But that is a feature of a lot of universities. And I think this, I mean, there's, I don't think, to be fair to many of those individuals, this isn't malintent. They're often just sort of given this job alongside loads of other things. And the problem with, I think, a lot of new and unusual routes into HE is that there is just no experience of it. And I think, you know, where there is experience of new qualifications and where they come through in volume, I think the HE sector is actually quite good at responding. I think if we look at some of the level three developments that have occurred over the last few years, as soon as those applicants come in numbers, people take the effort to find out about it, and it almost becomes part of the normal geography of the place. The difficulty is getting that breakthrough from the very small numbers where you may have something that really is quite unusual, and getting that recognised in volume. And I think there is a big job, again, to be done in terms of communicating these kinds of qualifications and really showing to institutions that it's safe to take a punt on one or two, find out about it. From that, you will gain experience and confidence, and then they will take more. But I think there is a crucial role for bodies such as UCAS to really strongly promote some of these less well-known routes into HE and really give admissions staff the confidence to take this on.
Yeah, I think there's the other side of the equation as well. I think it's the extent to which those applying for HE get support, appropriate support in terms of making the right choice and course decisions and making the right application decisions and support in that area as well. I think, obviously, panel members spoke about the HE side, but there's the applicant side as well. I think, you know, I spoke earlier on, I think the level of support applicants get, young people or other potential students get, varies greatly. And we do know that for some routes, in some institutions, those applying to HE get extensive levels of preparation and support. And that's one of the big reasons why they get accepted on their courses a lot. Whereas in other areas, they don't. One of the reasons they don't get accepted is because they're not getting support to apply for the right type of courses they get accepted to. So they're not going to succeed anyway. So I think there's a lot of two sides of the equation we need to look at as well.
Okay, thanks. Final question in this session. What struck me is when a soap actually has someone going to university from an advanced apprenticeship, we've made it. You know, because in the soaps, invariably, they've done an A-level. And they go on from their A-levels to do it. I do apologise for that. Yeah, and often in the soaps, they're going off to a particular university, like, I think it's EastEnders at the minute, where they go off to Oxford.
I think it's Oxford.
So we'll have to get some of that written into one of the soaps to make certain it's there. Can I thank these good people for being here? And sort of publicly, the University of Plymouth have been fantastic to Cornwall, not just to Cornwall College, and have embraced this agenda greatly. So publicly, my thanks to them for it. It's nice to see Ian, who's did a terrific job in the combined universities of Cornwall. Thanks for that. I thought Graham was excellent in terms of the work that he's actually doing. And whatever the funding stream, that's the work that's going to raise aspirations for people and actually going to make people aware of the opportunities that are actually going to be there. So on your behalf, thank you very much for the four of you for being here this afternoon. Thanks.